Okay, that's the communal chanting over. They used to do that before the FA Cup final. Community chanting, so that's where we got this one from. If you remember that. Good old days. Oh, that one, crikey. Okay, so now about how to meditate. Meditation is the easiest thing in the world when you don't do anything. Because we all tend to interrupt the natural process of the mind relaxing. Now, I've used the water simile here many times before, but I don't remember the last time I used my teacher, Ajahn Chah's simile. He would get his hand up here and he'd wave it all over the place. Now, this is not saying bye-bye to you all. He said, this is a simile of a leaf on a tree, and it only moves if the wind is blowing. And if the wind stopped blowing, then the leaf would move less and less until it becomes perfectly still, because that's the nature of a leaf, to be still. It only moves because something outside of itself is agitating it, the wind. And he said that's the same with this thing we call the human mind. It only moves because you want something, you're doing things, you're thinking of past or future, worrying about stuff which you don't really need to worry about. And if we can somehow stop all of that, somehow stop the wind, then your mind will move less and less and less, become more and more still, more peaceful and more at ease. And when your mind does slow down more, become more still, it gets more energy, simply because our poor old brain is overworked. We think much more than we should. Even when you're on holiday, we keep thinking about work. When we're at work, we think about home. When we are in bed, we're thinking about getting up. When you get up, you think about being back in bed. You're always never really where you are. And that means your poor brain has to work far too much. I often thought of starting another society, the Royal Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Brains. And you would all be fined. Because you think too much. So, here we're learning that we think because we want something, we're trying to control things. There's something blowing on our mind, making it move. If we can somehow just let go of wanting things, and just to be here. So you've done all your work today, you've managed to get your dinner early, or get something on the way back home. But trouble is that people think, oh no, there's so many loose ends which I have to tie up. Please remember, you'll never tie up all your loose ends. Even when you're in your coffin, you'll still have many loose ends. So you never get everything finished unless you are wise. Story number one. Not a joke, it's a story. This is profound. Rachel, behave yourself. I'm a bad influence on her. So, a long time ago, on this monastery in Thailand, they were building this new meditation hall. And when it came to the full moon day of July, that's when all the monks go on retreat. That means on the full moon day of July, you won't see the monks again for another 3 months. That's the only way we can really feel appreciated and valued, by disappearing for a while. Now, I know you value us. So, when it got to the full moon day of July, the abbot told all the builders, go home, come back again in 3 months, we don't want any disturbance while we're meditating. So all the builders went home. And a couple of days later, a visitor came into this monastery and they saw this hall. And they asked the abbot, when is the hall going to be finished? And he replied, it is finished. What do you mean, it's finished? There's bags all over the floor. There's no glass in the window. There's no tiles on the roof. Are you going to leave it like this? What do you mean? It's finished. And the wise old monk said, Sir, what's done is finished. And off he went to meditate. Now that is a wise person. Because that's the only way you can have any peace in this world. All the stuff which you've done already is finished. And so don't start anything else until tomorrow morning. The problem is, I told that story once in our centre in town. And on Sunday, a couple of Sri Lankan parents came to complain to me. Shouldn't tell that story in front of our kids. Why? He said, well, my 16-year-old son, Saturday night, he was going out to some party with his friends. We asked our son, I remember the deal, you can't go out until you've finished your homework. Is your homework finished? And the son said, Dad, just like Ajahn Brahm said, what's done is finished, see you tomorrow. That's a good thing, isn't it? Just say, what's done is finished. Have you finished the washing up? What's done is finished. Have you finished taking out the rubbish? What's done is finished. Because that's the only way you can get some peace in this world. So just learn how to let go of what's all been done. Yeah, you can do it again later on, but not during meditation. You deserve a rest. Some peace, for goodness sake. And all the things you have to do later. All the things in the future which are in front of you. Stop worrying about it. I've got this little philosophy which I try and keep. Because I have to do a lot of work. When you call it spiritual director, what is it really, Rachel? Not spiritual director, spiritual dictator, that's right. Spiritual dictator of many Buddhist societies. I follow the Kim Jong-un School of Management. Anyone argues, I take them outside and shoot them. I wish sometimes, but I never get around to it. Anyway. You know what it's like, it's in committees. You were president once. Mm-hmm. Anyway, only once, never again. But anyway, so with my philosophy of life, I found this out with all this experience. If you don't plan for the future, things tend to go wrong. You've got to do some planning. Otherwise you miss planes, you miss appointments and stuff. But if you do plan for the future, it goes wrong anyway. Either way it goes wrong, so I prefer not to plan and enjoy myself before everything goes wrong. So I think that's a very nice philosophy for the future. So don't plan so much. They can always, a lot of times people plan because of fear. They think that if they don't do it right, they're going to get in big trouble. You get into trouble anyway, so you can handle it. So that way we don't plan or worry so much about the future. And anyway, what you worry about usually doesn't happen anyway. So how many things have you worried about in your life which never ever happened? Oh, when was the last time here? Did I tell the story about the businessman in Mumbai who missed his flight?
Yes.
Okay. Obviously. Did I tell the story of when I had to go to the dentist as a 5-year-old kid, 6-year-old kid? Yeah. That would be good. This is a terrible thing. I prefer teaching elderly people because they forget all the stories I told.
You're in the right place then.
Yeah, sort of, but you're 5-year-olds, so you're in trouble. Okay, when I was about 5, 6, or 7, so the kids will understand this, I had to go to the dentist. And my mummy said, you can't go to school the following morning because you've got to go to the dentist. And in those days, the dentists were nothing like these days. This was, 55 years ago. Their needles, you could see them sharpening them up in the room, you know, before. And the drills. You know, remember those hand drills where I had electric drills? It was only just, one step up technologically from that. And they had all these instruments of torture in their surgery. And it's not like these days, everything's so hygienic and painless. That was really like going, to the Taliban's torture room or something. And I was so scared of going to the dentist. So when my mummy said, tomorrow you have to go to the dentist, I said, no, I don't want to go to the dentist, but you must, but I don't want to, but you have to do, but I can't, I won't. And I cried and cried and cried. And when I went to bed that night, oh, I never slept well. I was so afraid of going to the dentist. When I woke up in the morning, even as a 5-6-year-old, I knew some psychology. Mummy, you don't love me anymore. Yes, I do, darling, but why you send me to the dentist to get tortured? And so she eventually dragged me to that dentist, literally kicking and screaming. And I remember that because when I got to the dentist, I found my appointment was cancelled. The dentist was sick. All that worry and kicking and screaming and crying for nothing. But I got a good lesson from that. I realized all these things, more than half the things we worry about never happen anyway. So why worry about it? So, understanding that you are worrying about things which you don't need to worry about in any way. If you are concerned about your future, where is your future being made? When is the only time you can do anything for your future? Right now, yes. So relax. Be peaceful, be happy. And then you find your future tends to be fine. Because you are energizing, preparing yourself, resting yourself. So when you do need to go out there on the football pitch of life, you can kick goals instead of so many behinds. Is that a good simile? Okay, I'm pretty good. Read too many newspapers. But I can never understand Australian football, because I remember the first time I came to Australia about 32 years ago, they showed me a picture of the grand final and the winners. And the winners were holding up the cup, they had blood all over them. I think, crikey, if that's the winners, I would like to see where the losers have gone to. That was a really violent game. Anyway, back to meditation, which is not violent at all. If you are going to prepare yourself for the future, the best thing to do is relax in the present moment. So this is first thing with meditation. Let go of past and future. Come into this present moment, for goodness sake. You deserve to rest and relax. So if you can learn how to come into the present moment, forget about the past. You can't fix it. It's done. Finished. And you don't learn from the past. You learn from the present. So trying to figure out, you know, what went wrong, who did what and what, that's just a waste of time. Let the past go. As for the future, again, just the best way to prepare for it is being in the present moment. So both ways, if you can get into the present moment, it is the best place to be. The only place you'll ever find any peace and happiness. Right now. So if you can come into the present moment, that stops a lot of your thinking. A lot of your worrying. And of course, because a lot of people have some coughs here, so if during the meditation you want to cough, please cough as soon as possible. Do not hold it back. Because we've got something in meditation which is called the volcano effect. Which means you want to cough, but you decide to suppress it. And when you suppress it, it builds up energy. It builds up power. And so when it does blow, they can hear it in the sort of the surgeries over on the other side of the hospital. And it also, just like a volcano, it spews all this very unhealthy stuff around everyone behind you. So please, volcano effect means you want to cough, cough quick. Thank you. And the other thing, if anyone has got bad digestion, please always sit in the back, so there's not that many people behind you. That's my second piece of advice. This is very refined and high teaching. High stuff, yeah, really good stuff. Some of that stuff coming out of people's backside is pretty high. And anyway, where are we going? Oh, yeah, that's right. No past, no future. And then, when we get to sort of no past, no future, you get in the present moment, the next thing to do is remember, like, sometimes people forget about the importance of kindness, compassion, and just love. So whatever you're experiencing, please be kind to it. Don't try and get rid of it. So even like thoughts, why do thoughts come anyway? You don't have to think. It's just a way of escaping because we're not kind to our minds and our body. So if you're kind to something, it tends to stay with you. Story number two. or three or four or five, I forget which. There was this person, and they got a phone call on Saturday afternoon from their friend. Would you like to come out for a cup of coffee? And the woman said, yeah, okay. And so the caller said, yeah, I want to go to Gloria Jean's, not Starbucks or Domes or your coffee shop, because I like Gloria Jean's and I like short black. I know you like lattes, but I like short black, so that's what you're going to have. And you're going to have a biscuit. I know you like chocolate muffins, but they're bad for your health. I like biscuits, that's what you're going to have. And we're going to sit in the back. I know you like to sit on the veranda, but I like sitting in the back. We're going to talk about politics, because that's what I like to talk about, not your silly meditation rubbish. And then we're going to stay there for 1 hour, okay? If somebody does that to you, they tell you what coffee shop you're going to go to, what you're going to drink, what you're going to eat, where you're going to sit, and what you're going to talk about, would you like to go for a cup of coffee with a person like that? Of course not. Any excuse. You find out, oh yeah, I forgot, I've got to go to the dentist, I can't go to that, I'm terribly sorry. Maybe next time. And you hang up. And a few minutes later you get a call from another friend. They say, hey, do you want to go to a cup of coffee? He said, oh, it's such a shame. I've got a dentist appointment. He said, oh, well, you know, that coffee shop you always like going to, you know, you always say that the lattes there are to die for. I don't usually like latte, but if you like one, I'd like to try one. And you say those chocolate muffins are just so delicious. They're just one step less from full enlightenment. So I'm going to try those as well. And you're always interested in this meditation business. I don't know. I want to talk to you about meditation. Sit where you want to sit. And if someone is like that, they want to try your coffee shop and drink the coffee you like and eat what you want and talk about what you're interested in. And what do you say? You say, I'm cancelling the appointment. I'll see you there in 5 minutes. And as for the time, you spend all afternoon there because you're enjoying a friend, rather than a control freak who always tells you what to do and where to sit and what to talk about. Now that simile refers to you and your poor mind. You're always telling yourself what to do, where to drink, what to eat, what to blah 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 blah. That's why your mind keeps running away from you, because you're not kind to it. So instead, when you meditate, be kind to your mind. Say, hi mind, how are you? In the present moment. And just let your mind choose what it's aware of. With that kindness, you'll find a lot of your thinking will vanish and disappear. Because the only reason why we think too much is because we're running away from something. And what we're running away from? Ourselves. And after a while, when you're really kind, okay mind, that's fine. It doesn't run away and it stays with you. Like this lady in Perth, some years ago, she told me her 6-year-old got really angry at her mother. Mummy, I don't like you anymore. I'm leaving home. 6 years of age, she was about to leave home for the first time in her life. And what did Mummy do? She said, okay, darling, I'll help you pack. I'm sure many mothers would, you know, think that's a good idea, but they haven't got the guts to do it. So this was a very intelligent woman, intelligent mother. So she helped her kid pack, you know, all the necessities of life, you know, like the dollies and the teddy bears and stuff. And then the mummy said, kid, before you go, darling, I'll make you a sandwich for your lunch. So she made her kid's favourite sandwich, and then they went to the front door of the house, and Mummy waved her kid off. Have a wonderful life, darling. Don't forget to keep in contact. And the 6-year-old walked down the garden path through the gate, turned left down the road, left home for the first time in her life. A 6-year-old. You know what happened next? She got about 20, 50 feet down the road and then was homesick. Turned around, came back, opened the gate, down the path. Mummy hadn't moved. Welcome home, darling. Now that's called emotional intelligence. Instead of having an argument with your kid, he knew the kid would come home, he won't go that far, leaving home, and that way there was no argument, no temper tantrums, no upset. And I like using that story for your mind. When it wants to go off, thinking about all sorts of stupid stuff, bye-bye mind, have a nice time, pack its bags and wave it off. Because if you're kind, it doesn't wander around anymore, it stays with you. Why? Because it likes you, has a good relationship with you. Me and my mind, we're the best of mates. We've hung out together for years. So every time I start to meditate, my mind says, oh, it's him again. Yeah, great. What do you want to do? So this is actually understanding some of the deep psychology of the mind. So please be kind to yourself and don't judge yourself. Don't ever judge good meditation, bad meditation. Just be kind to yourself and be at peace with yourself. And then you find you don't need to think so much. Instead, you are just being here. So that way, everything, all the difficulties and problems, all tend to vanish. So when we're meditating, I'm going to start by, again, asking you to close your eyes. Not yet, don't. Wait for it. Close your eyes, because that sort of calms things down. We don't have to look at so many people. And then at first, you start to become aware of your body. Mindfulness of your body, so you can learn how to relax your body. It's incredible that people don't know how to relax. I just came back last week. It's really good being a monk. I was teaching meditation in a 5-star resort on a beach in Phuket. Good job, isn't it? Hard work, though, for some. So they had this spa available. No one went in the spa. They didn't need to because they get more relaxed meditating with me than in the spa. Saved a lot of money that way, but I was bad for business. I don't think I'll be invited there back again because that's where they make all their money on this other stuff. But anyway, there we were meditating, teaching people how to relax. Why do people go to these places for anyway? To relax. And can they relax? No, they still go worried even if they go into these expensive places. So, here in Armidale, you can relax deeper than the spa of Westin Sirin Bay Resort in Phuket, and you don't have to pay any expensive fees or travel on aircraft or go through customs, all for free here in Armidale, which is one of the reasons that what we call this group every Tuesday night is
Club Med,
Armidale. You never realize Armidale has a Club Med, do you? You're here, Club Meditation, Armidale. There you can actually relax, because what you're doing here, first of all, you're aware of your body when you start meditating. You learn how to relax it, and relax it, and relax it. And you feel muscles, tight muscles, easing. Oh, crikey, I'm going too late. Blimey, always too late. Similar muscles getting more and more relaxed, more easy. Things loosening up, tightness is vanishing. And you feel your body relax really deeply. Now, number one, that's really great for your health, but it also teaches you what this thing mindfulness is, by being mindful of the body, the feelings, sensations, and then kindness, learning how to relax them. Really relax them deeply. So all the muscles in the body, they just like open up, tight muscles get loosened off, knots of pain get expanded and softened, everything gets really nice. And actually you do get more relaxed than if you went to a spa in one of these resorts. Just by sitting here and following this mindfulness and kindness to your body. And it's also, and many of the traumas, tensions in your past, the anger, the grief, the problems, they get stored in the body. And just by relaxing, all that stuff comes out, you get really loose. And then once the body is that loose and relaxed, then you just go into this mind, no past, no future, and you relax your brain. So your brain gets so soft and easy and happy, you don't have to think. You're sitting here so peaceful, so relaxed. And you come out afterwards, and oh, 30 minutes, Ajahn Brahm, can't we go longer? Because you're enjoying every moment of just being with your best friend, your body and mind, being at ease with them, not telling them what to do. That's like the control freak telling you what to eat and drink in a coffee shop, but just relaxing and being at peace with yourself, being kind. So mindfulness and kindness, which together is kindfulness. So that's what we're going to do now. Any questions? No? Good. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to go sit down there. If you get ready for the meditation. That clock is far too fast. The battery is too powerful. Need to slow it down a bit. Okay, never mind. So here we go. I go in the big chair. Okay, don't put too many lights out, otherwise I can't see the clock at all.
We can leave them on.
Sorry?
We can leave them on.
Yeah, okay. Leave one or two on. Just leave them all on, why not?
No, we don't need to see the clock. Just enjoy it.
Just enjoy it. Okay, well, I post sometimes 3, 4, 5 hours meditation.
Come on.
Okay, you're on. I think you get in trouble afterwards.
They can leave as they want to.
There we go. So here we go. Close your eyes. Shut up. Those who want to cough, cough. Now with your eyes closed, start to be aware of your body, how it feels. The first thing you should be aware of with your body is whether you need to move your body to adjust it this way or that. And if you do need to move the body, please move it. Adjust the bottom, the legs, the back. There is no magic posture. It works for you every time. You always have new postures. What feels right to you. So learning what feels right is getting awareness of the body. And doing something is being kind to your body, caring for it, looking after it, pampering it. So if you need to sneeze, sneeze. If you need to scratch, scratch. Once you think your body is comfortable, think again. There must be some part of your body which is irritating, aching, or in pain. Be aware of that part of your body. And once you're aware, mindful of that part of the body, that will allow you to get feedback. It's like a dial on the dashboard of a car, which tells you whether you're going too fast or too slow, whether there's enough petrol in the engine or you need to fill up, whether the engine is too hot or whatever. Those dials on the dashboard of a car give you feedback. In the same way that the feeling in your body of comfort or irritation gives you feedback. And soon see what you need to do to relax that feeling. You'll find what makes that feeling less painful, less tight, less tense, is kindness, or just letting go. Just let it be as it is, with care, with kindness. And mindfulness together with kindness, you will get feedback that those irritations are easing off. You are relaxing your body, but just the most irritating part of it. Once one part of the body has been relaxed, it's not so painful or so irritating, then choose another part of your body which is irritating. Maybe your throat because you've got a cough.
be aware of that feeling as much as you can and see how to relax it. Sometimes it just takes trial and error before you realize that what relaxes, eases off the irritation or pain, is kindness, opening the door of your heart to that feeling and not trying to change it, letting it be. When you don't control things, when you don't want them to be different, the wind stops blowing, so the leaf stops moving. You become peaceful and still. Keep on being aware of your body. When one part has been relaxed, choose another part. As you learn to relax your whole body, I usually don't stop until I feel the delight of relaxation. Same feeling that people pay all this money for to go to a spa, to get a massage or hot oil, or go into a bath. I do that just by being aware and being kind and relaxing everything. Being aware of your body until it feels really good. The longer you stay with the body, the more awareness you have. You tend to become more sensitive to these sensations in the body. You know them more, which means you can relax them. Your body feel. Keep on relaxing, taking away any tightness or tension. So your whole body feels like it's been in some hot bath. No pain, no tightness in any muscle or ligament or bone. Find you can relax any pain away. And once the body is relaxed as much as you can get in, then you can let the body go. It will now look after itself. And you become aware of your brain, your mind, with all the worries about the past and future. Remember, this is no time for the past. The past is gone, finished. You deserve a rest from all your problems. You deserve a holiday to get away from it all. And all you need to do is to say no. It's not the time for the past. What's done is finished. come into this present moment called now. And from here, this moment, you learn, not from the past, but from the present. And all of your worries about the future, the best thing you can do for those is to rest right now. Prepare yourself, energize yourself, relax in this moment, so that you can face the future with the greatest amount of health and energy by resting in the present. So give importance to being now. How does it feel right now? See if you can be kind to this moment. Opening the door of your heart to whatever it is you're experiencing now in your mind. Not trying to get rid of it. Not trying to make something else happen. But just making peace with this moment, not war. Make peace right now. Let go. And your awareness of this moment will give you feedback. The present moment starts to relax like your body did. You're not so tight and tense around whatever you're experiencing. You're not so afraid. You're at peace. Which means you don't need to think so much. The thoughts are like waves on a lake. When the lake calms down and becomes still underneath, there are no waves on top. When your mind relaxes and settles down, you don't need to think so much, if at all. Just relax to the max. Not trying to go anywhere or get anything or get rid of things. Just making peace with this moment. Making peace with the now. Notice how you feel. There's another dial in the dashboard of your mind called peace. How peaceful are you? How relaxed? How at ease inside? See what you need to bring more peace into your mind. Just letting things be. Your mind relaxes all by itself. thoughts do come up, maybe you can just become aware of your breathing. It's a way of stopping those thoughts and anchoring yourself in this present moment. So just notice the breathing as it goes in and goes out. Just make peace with the breath. See how much you can relax your own breathing. Mindfulness of the breath gives you feedback. And if you relax the breathing, it gets so soft and light. Being aware of your breathing and relaxing it. And noticing how peaceful you are. Again, no need to worry about the past or the future. Keep coming to this present moment. Be kind, and all your thoughts will relax away. Don't forget to be kind. coming close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? How peaceful have you become? And why? What worked and what didn't work? At the end of every meditation, spend a couple of minutes just reflecting back. So in every meditation you learn a little bit more about peace of mind, what it feels like, where it comes from. Now go to ring the gong three times. At the end of the third ringing of the gong, come out from your meditation.
Afterwards, sometimes there's any questions. Is there any questions in the box for this evening?
Mm-hmm.
You got one? Two?
Two.
Wow. Okay. So, instead of whoever's teaching here just thinking what they want, we can get some feedback so you can ask your questions. So we try to answer them. Which is the best one?
We have three on
that
one, so yeah. I'll let you make that.
Okay.
Call on
this. Here we go. That's actually a question on rebirth, reincarnation. Should I try that one? More Buddhist.
Had a heavy dose of
heavy.
That last week.
Sorry? What did you just ask me?
Had a heavy dose of that last week.
Okay. Okay, this is more nice one. Love is a... I've got to be serious. Sorry. Love is a word used in many different contexts within our culture. We can love a person, something, food, etc. I was wondering if you can demystify the word love and explain what it is to love in the Buddhist context. Okay, there's many types of love. For example, you fall in love with your partner. What type of love is that? Because it doesn't last that long, does it? Even though we keep on saying, I will love you forever. But how long does forever mean in a marriage? But, you know the old story, that love is like a pack of cards. You know that one? Marriage, especially, is love of, marriage is like a pack of cards. You start off with two hearts and a diamond, and you end up wanting a club and a couple of spades. You knew that was coming, didn't you? You know, I do wedding blessings. I told that at a wedding blessing up in the Vines Resort. They loved it. okay, so that... So why does that happen, for goodness sake? Now, your partner in life, you really go to a lot of trouble to choose them. In fact, you spend more time choosing your partner than you do like choosing a car. You know, a car, you just go to the shop, you know, you drive it around for a few times, okay, I'll buy that. You know, sometimes the same with cars, some are new models, some are second hand. But, you know, you can still get a good car, even though it's second hand. But why is it that you go through all this trouble going out with someone, you know, testing them out, learning about them, and you still can't commit to them forever. Whereas when you have a kid, doesn't matter what your kid is like, you will love them forever. So I always like to compare the love of, say, two people in a relationship, the love for your child. For a child, it is unconditional. Yeah, you'd like your child to be a good kid. Yeah, you want them to sort of do well in life and to be respectful and to be happy. But, you know, even if they're not, you still love your kid. And that is what we call the unconditional love, called opening the door of your heart, no matter what that person does. Now, many of you have heard me say this before. That's one of the key stories in my life. When my father took me aside when I was only, 13, I think, and said to me something which would stay with me for the rest of my life. He died when I was 16, but he gave me this incredible gift of the meaning of what love is. Because he said to me, he's a poor guy from Liverpool, and he said to me, son, however you turn out in your life, whatever you do, whatever you become, there's one thing I want you to always remember, and that's the door of my house will always be open to you. That's what he said, the door of his house. I didn't understand at the time, I was only 13, but I remembered it's important. And later on in my life, when I was a monk, one of the nice things about being a monk, you have time. You have time to reflect on these things and to work out what did the fellow really mean. And I realized what he meant was not the door of his house, which was a council flat. You know, sort of the cheapest housing, which you could possibly get. Government supported housing, even just an apartment. And in fact, we were so poor, as I keep on saying, that my father was never worried about sort of burglars. In fact, he often used to keep the door open on purpose, hoping a burglar would come in, take pity on us and leave something. No, we were actually really poor. And so I realized it couldn't have meant the door of his house. But I realized it was the door of his heart was open to me. And that meant such a huge thing when you realize that he'd opened the door of his heart to me, no matter how I ever turned out, no matter what I ever did. I was his son, and that was enough. It was unconditional love. Love with no strings attached. The interesting thing was, it was like a blank check. But because it was such a blank check, he respected that man so much that there's no way I could hurt him. And, he really wanted to live up to such trust. It's the same thing with love in a relationship. Can't one day you say that to your partner? Say to them, darling, and whatever you do, the door of my heart's always open to you. I will always love you no matter what. Obviously, I prefer you to behave. But, it's an unconditional love. What happens psychologically in real life is that if you give such love to a person, it takes the relationship up to that next level. And they'll always be caring for one another when you give them that sense of freedom. So that's that sense of love to a partner, to be able to say to them. And for some relationships, it does get to that point. It's not that I want you for this and that, and whatever. It's just to say, I can love you no matter who you are, no matter what you do, no matter where you go. It's love which is at a higher, unconditional level. And then you go to stage three. And stage three is to be able to say that to yourself, which is one of the hardest things to do. To say to yourself, just like my father said to me, me, this person I can never get divorced from. You can run away from your kids. You can separate from your partner. Wherever you go, you find there you are again. You can't run away. So there comes a time. And I say this in everybody's life, sooner or later, usually in a nice quiet time when you feel safe and are ready, you say to yourself, me, this person I've known for so long, and I've given such a hard time to. I'm not perfect. I've been trying so hard to be perfect all these years. Trying to live up to other people's expectations. And try and live up to my own goals as well. and you haven't lived up to them. You can't. You're a human being. But you say to yourself, me, the door of my heart is open to me. No matter who I am, no matter what I've done in life, no matter what lies in front of me, I care for me, and I forgive me, I accept me. There's a beautiful sense of relief when you learn how to love yourself and care for yourself. And that is such a rare thing to have, so much so, that even last February I was in California giving a series of talks. And at one of the talks in Sacramento, that they brought this Anglican bishop to one of my talks. And seeing an opportunity, to outwit an Anglican bishop, I really mean and cheeky sometimes, I told him one of my favorite stories on love. And it was about the 7 monks meditating in a cave. I think it's been a while since I told that story. The 7 monks meditating in a cave a long time ago. They were meditating on love, compassion. May all beings be happy and well, without exception, animals as well, all beings. And in this little story, it's going to be a test for each one of you. Because I'm going to ask you a question at the end of this story, so please pay attention. Because the 7 monks in this cave were as follows. There was the head monk, number one. The second monk was his brother. They both become monks together. The third monk was his best friend. The fourth monk was his enemy. Even though they were monks together, they had like personality clashes. You know what it's like? Sometimes people just can't get on with each other. Both good people, but they can't get on. They were enemies. The fifth monk was a very old monk. So advanced in years, he could die any day. And the next monk, number six, was a very ill monk. And again, he was so sickly and ill that no one knew who would die first, the old monk or the sick monk. And last of all, number seven, was the useless monk. Now the useless monk, whenever he meditated, he fell asleep. And worse, he snored and woke everyone else up. Whenever he chanted, he always chanted out of key and forgot the words. And he could never do anything right. So he was a useless monk. And I often say, because I've been to many monasteries throughout the world, every monastery has at least one. Some even two or three. But anyway, the useless monk. So those are the 7 monks. And one day this band of thieves, this gang of robbers, found that cave in the jungle and they thought this is a wonderful place for their hideout. They can store all their stolen goods there and then hide there from the authorities until the heat went down. It's a great little hiding place for them. But there was one problem. The monks had found the cave first. So they decided to kill all the monks, to slaughter them and take over the cave. But the head monk, like it's amazing with head monks, they were such good talkers. They can convince people of anything. Should have been a politician. Should have been a second-hand car salesman. So he managed to talk the head of this gang into releasing all the monks except one. Because they had to ensure, the whole purpose of killing everybody was to make sure that no monk told the location of this cave. So the gang thought if they could kill one of those monks in front of everybody else, it would show that they were serious. And if any monk, once they were released, told the police, the gang would find them and kill them. That was the best the head monk could do. So this poor old head monk had to make the decision who would be killed so all the other ones could go free. So the 7 monks again. So I'm going to ask you who the head monk chose. So 7 monks, remember, was the head monk, his brother, his best friend, his enemy, never liked anyway, an old monk who was about to die, sick monk who was also about to die, and the useless monk who had never done anything for anyone in his whole life. So the question is, if you were the head monk, who would you choose? Now if you know this story, if you read it, remember it, please be quiet. If you haven't heard the story before, you've really forgotten it, ask you, if you were the head monk, who would you choose? Any suggestions? Self. Who thinks himself? Put your hand up. Okay, you're all wrong. That's the wrong answer. Any other suggestions? Sorry?
The bad guy.
The bad guy, the... No, not him. Anyone for the useless monk? No, that's wrong also. Now, the reason I tell this story, because the bishop, he put his hand up, sacrificed himself. When I said that was the wrong answer, he was quite confused. What is the right answer? And the right answer is, remember, these monks were doing loving kindness for all beings. So his love towards his brother was exactly the same, no more, no less, than his love towards his best friend. Exactly the same as his love towards his enemy. The old monk, the sick monk, even the dear old useless monk, he loved them all equally. And most importantly, he loved all those other six monks, no more, no less, than he loved himself. He loved everyone equally. And as I reminded the bishop with great glee, I'm a very naughty monk, I reminded the bishop, said, don't remember your teacher Jesus saying, to love your neighbour as yourself. Not to love your neighbour more than yourself, but as yourself, which means to love yourself as your neighbour. No more, no less. And he smiled, he got it. Why is it we keep sacrificing ourselves? Everybody puts their hands up, usually say to sacrifice himself. That doesn't understand the meaning of love. We love other people. We're kind to others. We forgive others. But do you ever love yourself just as much? And be kind, as kind to yourself as you are kind to others. Forgiving to yourself as you are forgiving to others. If you are, then you know the meaning of that story. So when it says to open the door of your heart, it's not just to other people, it's also to yourself. To love yourself as you love all other beings. You're not perfect. You've got all these mistakes, or all these flaws, and some people who come to Armadale Group have been through hell. Abused, had a very difficult time. So many people say, I can't love myself because I'm damaged goods. I love that word, damaged goods. Because I love damaged goods. And the simile which you've heard so many times here, which is brilliant, I can't improve upon this, is going into a forest, into a wood, and trying to find the perfect tree. By which I mean one which is dead straight. One with all the branches in place, none have been torn off by the storms. With all the leaves green, no yellow leaves, no brown leaves, no leaves been eaten by the insect. And a bark which is nice and smooth, with no scars or wounds on the bark. And if you can find one of those, you'll be the first ever. And that tree would not be very beautiful at all. I'm sure you'll agree with me, the crooked ones, the ones which the branches have been torn off so the animals get nests in the holes made in the trees, the ones which are all got all this stuff on the bark, all these bumps and damage and stuff, they're the ones which are the most beautiful. The damaged ones. So if you are damaged goods, welcome to the forest of real life humanity. You belong. You're like the beautiful crooked tree in the forest, damaged by the storm of life. You are more lovable than the perfect straight trees. When you understand that, you understand how you can love yourself and open up the door of your heart to yourself. On all those things you thought as damaged and flaws, you look upon as being beautiful stuff. So if you married a guy who's crooked, he's beautiful. If you married a woman who's bent all over the place, they're the best. And if you're a mess, you are so lovable. So that's what we mean by opening the door of your heart to yourself. When no matter who you are, no matter what you are, it's so easy to love everybody. when you understand the symbol of the trees and the forest. Real life. Not what you see on the front pages of magazines. That is crazy stuff. Now, quite honestly, this meditation is really taking off. One of my friends, he went on a retreat with Kate Moss. She's supposed to be a hot supermodel. And so being a guy, what did he do? Was he watching his breath? No way, he was looking. Which one is Kate Moss? And it's interesting, he couldn't find her. He didn't know which one it was. She was there somewhere. The reason is because the Kate Moss you see on the covers of magazine is not the real woman. She's just like a blank canvas on which they can paint anything. And it is the makeup, the hairdo and everything else and the lighting makes her a supermodel. In reality, she's just an ordinary person. So all this fantasy of what is perfect and beautiful, that's what it is, it's a fantasy. The reality is, you are the beautiful one. You are the perfect one, if you know how to look. Interestingly, Rachel, I got this email from this guy. He's a physicist also at Cambridge. And he always had this problem about what is beauty anyway? Is beauty out there in the world and you happen to see it? Or is beauty what you add onto things? And he said, what? What changed his mind was one of my stories about meditation. Because as you meditate, you get more and more peaceful, more and more still. Your brain becomes energized to the point where whatever you see becomes beautiful. And it's an incredible thing. You go out after good meditation and the stars are just so bright. The leaves, you can just almost like fluorescent green. Because the more aware you are, the more beauty you tend to see. Those of you who know where I live, some of you have been up there in a monastery up in Serpentine. It's on top of a hill. And there's a reason we put it on top of a hill. Because that's where holy people are supposed to stay. On top of mountains. And so we haven't got any mountains up here in, you know, Perth, but at least we've got a hill. So you never hear of holy people. Or have you ever heard of a holy man living in a swamp? There is one.
Yoda.
Exactly, you got him. Yoda. He lives in a swamp. That's Hollywood. He was so unconventional, he didn't do anything by the rules. But by the rules, you know, we're supposed to live on top of mountains. So when we first came, we were trying to find a hill to put a monastery on top of, so that's why we're up there. So, I've been up there about 32 years now, but the first 7 years, I'd always go up and down that hill in a car. And it was after 7 years, roughly, the first time, it was a beautiful spring morning, had plenty of time, I was coming back from some appointment, I told the driver, drop me off at the bottom, I'm walking up the hill. So they did, and I walked up. It's only about 2.5 kilometres, not that long, that far. This was quite a steep hill. And as I was walking up it, I had this incredible experience. I could not recognise my surroundings. And I'd been living up there for 7 years, up and down, for such a long time. And I wonder what was going on. I saw things I'd never seen before. It looked totally different than what I'd seen through the window of a car. And so I stopped and stared. And when I stopped and stared, it changed again. I saw more and more and more of what was out there in the valley. Blades of grass, bushes, little rocks, the lichen on the rocks, the stream in the bottom of the valley, and how it just had a little waterfalls all over the place. And it looked so incredibly beautiful. I've never seen so much detail and so much beauty before. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. Did someone put some drugs in my tea that morning, or what was going on? And of course I realized, a little bit of reflection, what was happening was that when you look through the window of a speeding car, the light which hits the back of your eye doesn't have time to form a complete image. Before an image comes up, pushes out the first, and you've got to deal with another one, then another one, then another one. It's a chemical reaction on the back of your eye, on the retina, and not even the colours are fully formed. But when I went slower by getting out of the car and walking, not only did I see more, but the colours and the detail had more time to develop in the back of my eye. But nothing beats standing perfectly still. And then I had all the time in the world to form the full image of what was out there in the hillside. And of course the colours now were rich as they really should be, as they really are. Only when I stood still and allowed the sense of seeing to actually finish its job. I've never seen the grass so green. I always remember the bark on the trees. There was just so much going on there. So beautiful, so many different colours of brown. It was just delightful. And from that I got the simile of the beauty in life. We rush so fast that we're like looking through the window of a speeding car. That's our life. And we think we know the people we live with. We even think we know the street where we live. If you haven't done this before, one day, just get out the end of the street and walk along the street where you live. You find so many stuff you haven't seen before. And the slower you go, the more beautiful it seems. So the reason why we don't see beauty is because we're going so fast. When we slow down in meditation, we see more, what we see is more beautiful. And quite frankly, even the people you live with, you can see so much beauty in them when you slow down. It surprises people. You know, your old grandma, 90, she looks so beautiful when you slow down and see what's really there. And even yourself, this person which you forgot to see its goodness and beauty. If you look, it's there. So beauty is not in a person like a Kate Moss, it's just how we look at them. The lighting, the stillness. And you tend to see so much more beauty after a really good meditation. I told people last week in Phuket, now every room had a sea view. But after a few days, most people couldn't notice it anymore. They were used to it. Except when you had a good meditation. And you came out, and afterwards, the sea was sparkling, like diamonds everywhere. And the colour, the blues and the greens, were so intense. Everything was just incredibly wonderful. That is what happens in meditation. That's where you get beauty. And when you find beauty in all sorts of weird stuff, that's when you can love it. Because the love needs appreciation. Seeing the good in something. It's okay to say opening the door of your heart, but you have to have something to open the door of your heart to. And once you see that beauty and goodness, and all these people you always found fault with, see they're not that bad after all. And the most important person is not that bad. It's your little old self. Not like you can be at peace with yourself. At least there's one person in the world who loves you. Yourself. And so to express that, one last little exercise before you go, to practice how to love yourself. Arms out. Arms out, everybody. Bring them in. And give yourself a good hug. Oh. That really feels good. So if no one else will hug you in this world, at least there's one person who can. That's yourself.
And you've got to hug a tree as well.
Hug a tree. Some of the bigger trees. But hugging yourself. Now that's the nicest thing. And then the tree will hug you. Okay. So there you go. Any questions, comments, complaints? I don't know if I answered the question. And about the question about rebirth, reincarnation, I'll answer that in your next life. You just wait a minute. Honey, listen, absolutely true. I gave a talk in Melbourne, and one of the people who came to that talk was a performer, goes on TV, he's a comedian in the Melbourne Comedy Club. And he offered me a job. Honestly, he said, I've been watching you. Your timing is really perfect. Original material. I want to give you a job. So I was actually offered a job at the Melbourne Comedy Club. Yeah, I never accepted because, you know, I enjoy my day job. But you know, if ever I sort of, you know, got nothing else to do, I can always take that up. Might see me on the TV. comedy hour. No, that's it. My mother. Sorry?
You can always go back to chasing Higgs.
Chasing Higgs? Oh, bosons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Bosons are for bozos.
Oh.
Of course not. That's a physics joke. Bosons are for bozos.